Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City, NPR News Talk 90.7, putting Delmarva first. It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
Is the issue on the U.S. southern border a question of immigration or refugees? Should we just be discussing the plight of some 50,000 children who are now in the U.S. care as part of the gridlock debate in Washington politics, or as a humanitarian crisis? Are these children illegal, undocumented immigrants, or political and economic refugees? Welcome to Delmarva Today. This is Mike O'Loughlin sitting in for Don Rush for this morning's program. Last week, Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley clearly took a stand, defining the issue as one of refugees, stating that to send these children back to their home countries would be to send them to certain death. As the governor argued, we are Americans, and we do not return refugee kids who find themselves on our doorstep back into war-torn or famine-racked places where they will face certain death. I think we have to act like Americans. Is he right? With me today in the studio to discuss this refugee and immigration issue is Ms. Anita Biggs, victim immigration attorney with La Esperanza, an organization that provides assistance to the Hispanic community in Sussex County, Delaware. Good morning, Ms. Biggs, and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well,
I just wanted to make a point that I'm contracted by La Esperanza, but I also have other clients in Maryland and some other places.
So, how would you characterize this issue as we've laid out? Do you agree with Martin O'Malley or somewhere in between?
I absolutely agree with Governor O'Malley, and I'm also glad to know that Governor Markell has also characterized the situation as a humanitarian issue. I know that this is a very controversial topic, and I understand that people are concerned, but I do hope that more and more people will see the humanitarian aspect of this, because more recent reports are also showing that it is because of increased violence that the kids are coming. There are a number of reasons why they're coming, a number of factors, but most of them have been abused, often along the way as well. And I believe that we need to treat them as refugees.
Would you perhaps explore a bit further? I mean, I've seen some UN reports showing the situation in the Central American countries, particularly El Salvador, Honduras, and Guatemala, the statistics on the murder rate and the poverty rate, of course, over the course of time, that this has gone, the trend line has been set for some time. So this is not just a recent kind of development. Could you comment on that?
That's true, but I believe also we're finding, well, there are additional factors leading to this surge, I believe, but there are also worsening conditions in the countries, particularly the countries that they call the Northern Triangle in Central America, Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador. And in Guatemala, it seems particularly that things are getting worse because there are more gang and cartel issues than there had been before. And so people are wanting to flee. Most of the clients that we work with, that I work with, that are seen both in on the eastern shore, at least the northern eastern shore of Maryland, as well as southern Delaware, are from Guatemala. So I think that the area here, you know, who would be receiving, where families are receiving these children, are from Guatemala disproportionately.
Where do these children end up in the local area in Delaware and Maryland?
Well, 90% of the kids, well, first of all, when the kids are picked up, they when they're not from a contiguous country, when not from Mexico, they have to be turned over to the Department of Health and Human Services and the Office of Refugee Resettlement and treated as kids, detained as kids. They're screened for health issues, education issues. And then at an increasingly rapid rate, they're being able to be reunited most of the time with family members or other people who they know. I think 90% of the kids are being able to be handled that way once they're screened and treated, and the ORR makes sure that the receiving adults are appropriate adults. So, and it depends on where the families are living. I mean, they're living in our area, you know, Sussex County. Also, there's a large Guatemalan community in that I'm most familiar with in Caroline County, Talbot County. I believe a lot in the Salisbury area as well.
So in an important sense, refugees, they get placed in various parts of the country.
Exactly. Yeah, so. I know that a disproportionate number of them are in, you know, still near the Mexican border. Certainly they're being housed there while they're being reunited. But there are, wherever the families live, which is really all over the country, is where the kids are going to.
So the recent discussion about between Martin O'Malley and Governor Maskell that the question of whether we'd accept some of this particular batch of folks, this is not a new experience at all. There's a history that goes back some time. What would be the origins, would you say? When did this problem begin in terms of when children began to come into, say, into Maryland?
Well, the children, I think, nationally have been coming in, unaccompanied minors. I think one difference is they're coming in younger now, and, of course, in much greater numbers. But certainly I've known kids who have come in since, probably since I started working with in the area, maybe at least in 2006, 2007, and probably before. But what's called a surge, maybe we call it a super surge now, the surge really started in 2011, from what I understand, when more were coming in. Yeah.
Would you want to project as to where this might go? The trend line, is this the surge and it's going to ebb now, or is there going to be a consistent, are we going higher? What's your sense about that?
Well, I think that, I've heard other people state opinions about this too, who have some knowledge, that it probably won't increase at the exponential rate that it had very recently. People are desperate to get out of their countries when they're victims of gang violence, and there really are. I do believe that they would be, many could be killed, and certainly their lives would be in danger if they returned. But on the other hand, there is to some extent a belief that when they're in the country, in their home countries, and human traffickers are taking advantage of this, there's a mistaken belief that once all kids come here, that they can stay forever. And that's not true. They are immediately put into in removal proceedings, maybe not immediately seen by the judges, although the Obama administration is sending more money for more hearings more rapidly. But when I think it becomes more clear that, no, they can't stay forever, There may be, probably be less people trying to get here. On the other hand, people are desperate,
Well, maybe then we'd shift our focus to the specific laws and statutes that are relevant here. And let me just mention, to my understanding, the most important one, which is the Trafficking Victims Protection Reauthorization Act of 2008, which passed under the George Bush administration with heavy bipartisan support. And the other law that has been mentioned is the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals Act, program that the Obama administration has been implementing since June of 2012. Could you address the relevance of both of those, or either one of those, and how they the relevant codes that apply?
Yes. Well, the law that it actually does affect the kids right now is that 2008 law that was part of the larger trafficking legislation that was widely supported, I should say, under the Bush administration.
Yes.
And that states that the kids need to be, unaccompanied minors cannot be just sent back. They have to be turned over to Office of Refugee Resettlement, treated as kids, screened. And the location, even the location of these shelters, is kept very, very private and confidential, more so than ever, I believe, to protect the kids, because it's known that many of them have been victims of trafficking, of other kinds of crimes. So the idea is, as part of that legislation, to make sure that kids have not been, victims of serious trafficking crimes and other types of crimes. Many of them will not be found to, in the court system, to be eligible under that. And there is another law, too, that could take effect, which is called the Special Immigrant Juvenile Law, where if kids were found to be abandoned or abused or neglected in their home countries and can't return, they can sometimes gain status that way. But that's a bit of a complicated process, usually requires an attorney, and there are very few attorneys, especially in this area, who can take those cases. The other law that you mentioned, DACA, I think that's where the confusion might be coming from, especially well here as well as in the other in the home countries. That states that there, the way that law is developed and specified makes it impossible for the new kids to qualify, because that law is for people who came in as children but had to be here as of June 15th, 2007 or earlier.
Ah, so there's a specific calendar date which excludes by law
The kids who have come in since then, that's
since
right.
Then. I see.
But I do think that some confusion has occurred with that. And the kids who were protected under DACA are the same kids who have worked so hard and others have worked to try to see legislation through the DREAM Act to actually give them a path towards permanent residency and citizenship. Mm-hmm. And that is a very different group of kids.
So this, in terms of how we define and understand the issue then, is it principally a question of refugees, even mm-hmm. though the immigrant status is an issue as well? Could you comment a bit further to clarify that?
It's a very interesting question, because I know they're very different views about that. It's an immigrant. I mean, I guess I would see it overall as an immigrant issue, but important to note that there really are issues here that might incline us to see them. I would like us to be able to see them as refugees, because they are the great majority of these kids are fleeing really desperate situations, and they the trip itself is so harrowing that they would not leave unless they felt that. They had to get away from where they are.
So in this respect, they're, in one sense, not volunteering to exit their countries. There's really coercion
in the back of that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that one UN statistic I saw recently was that the murder rate of Guatemala was, I think in 2012, was 90 per 100,000 people. And then it's come down to 75 per 100,000, mm-hmm. but it's still... It's a harrowing experience within the country itself.
And we know that Guatemala has, I think, the fifth highest murder rate in the world, Honduras having the first. Mm-hmm. So, and I think El Salvador has gotten a little better, but all three of those countries have just incredible amounts of violence. And the governments can't control the gangs.
Yes.
So that actually is something that I know some people have proposed. I believe recently Delaware Senator Carper and others have talked about, could we do something in the home countries and people's home countries to better their government, to strengthen them, to give them more economic opportunities. And in part, I guess, because those governments are rather weak, some people feel that might not work. But that would be a wonderful way of trying to deal with some of this. So again, the kids would be safer, and they might have some opportunities in their own countries.
Mm-hmm. And perhaps part of the context here as well is that the situation with Mexico has ebbed a bit as well, in part mm-hmm. because economic conditions have improved somewhat in Mexico.
Yes.
So if we could draw a parallel, is that fair mm-hmm. that's a possibility?
That's absolutely true. Right. And also in general crossings by adults in general has also gone down, but in particular Mexicans, mm-hmm. And in mm-hmm. part because of the, I think, the increased economic opportunities in Mexico, and in part because there's a stronger border security.
Could you speak to your personal experience in terms of the local situation where you work? Some stories of kids that have come, not necessarily immediately, but in the past, since you've been working with Esperanza.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and outside of Las Esperanza as well, because some other kids as well, around the state and in Maryland. I'm not sure of actual numbers of people coming in, to the agency, because I work in a different section. But I do have a number of these kids who I can include in the programs that I have. I mostly work with crime victims. And a number of – and with what's called a U visa. Mm-hmm. And so a number of the kids who have come in happen to have a parent who has a U visa or is in that process, and we can include the kids. So because the kids who are getting caught are having to go to immigration court, that means that I would go to immigration court with a number of them to say, this person qualifies for a U visa, and then that's sent somewhere else. I know that I know one child, one girl that tried to make it up on her own. Her mother lives here and didn't know what was happening.
How old
the
was
girl
she?
Came up as 10 years old.
10 years
and
old.
This was a couple of years ago when that was really an amazing wow. age. Now we're hearing more.
Yes.
On her own, didn't make it, was picked up in Mexico. A lot of the kids are, and then they're sent back to their countries. She was picked up, sent back, and she made another plan, again, without her mother knowing it. And then she called her mother. Nobody heard from her for a month, and we were... A number of us, except for the mother who has great faith, believed that she had, you know, we were afraid that she had been one of the many kids who died along the way. And then she called. And she had, in fact, been abandoned by the coyote. But someone picked her up, immigration picked her up right away. And now she is reunited with her mother and very happy. And I agree with some things others have said about these kids. Just despite them having, almost all of them, suffered pretty serious trauma, that they're really... resilient and amazing and resourceful kids, good kids.
Is the life pattern then of a lot of these children that once they, if they have a family member in the United States, they mm-hmm. can be reunited with them.
Yes.
And so and then they become U.S. citizens at some point. How?
Well, it's such a lot. It's so funny because those of us, including me, who were born in this country, don't realize how complicated it
yes.
is to become a citizen.
Mm-hmm.
So few pathways and many steps and difficult steps along the way. The kids. There are different ways. For example, the kids that who are my clients with a U visa, that is that provides.
What is a U visa?
U visa is a way for crime victims who have suffered from certain violent crimes to apply for non-immigrant status to be legal here for 4 years. And at the end of their fourth year, they can apply for permanent residence. And I have a number of clients who've been able to do that. They can also include certain family members who have the same requirements, and they have to show they've been in the country, that they have, you know, that they deserve to have permanent residency at the end of that 4 years. But it's a complex process and time consuming to apply. You have to show you've cooperated with the authorities, because the U visa was really, it's under the VAWA Act, and it came about in 2000, I believe. It's to benefit both the immigrant cooperating victim as well as law enforcement, because before immigrants were afraid to come forward to testify. So it really benefits both.
I see.
And so some of those, that is a way to get non-immigrant status, which can lead to permanent residency. After permanent residency, people can apply for citizenship in 5 years.
5 years. So a child could then, when would citizenship finally come about?
Well, let's see.
If they
have a U visa,
in the country.
For example,
yes. uh-huh.
they have
yes.
a U visa. Let's say 4 years with the non-immigrant status, and then 5 years, maybe 9 years, maybe 10 years, considering the time to prepare the application. And so it's a long process.
Now, the other route, of course, some of these mm-hmm. these children then will end up becoming. I mean, what I've seen figures as high as 80% of the children who come eventually become citizens. Is that close to it?
I don't think that's right.
Is that not right?
I mean, I've seen different, and
yes.
I think the figures are changing so rapidly that it's hard to keep
track.
You know, I've heard more like maybe 50%, because one thing that's happening, the more kids coming in, fewer of them are able to get attorneys. For a while, there's a group called KIND, Kids in Need of Assistance, that has tried and has done a great job of trying to get pro bono attorneys around the country to help these kids. So they went from, I think, having, 30%, now 50%, maybe even up 1.70% of the kids with attorneys, because the government doesn't provide these attorneys. It has to be pro bono or paid. Now there's so many kids coming in that they're much less able to provide attorneys for these kids, and when they don't have an attorney, they're much less likely to win a case.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I think it might be, I don't know, 50. It's hard to know. 50-70%. But I'll tell you another thing that I heard. It was really sad, and it shows the hopes people have. One young man came in Massachusetts, and I met him in Delaware later. But he had been. I think he came in a couple of years ago, and he said, this isn't fair, this isn't right. I did all the things the judge told me to do, because the judges tell the kids, go to school, you know, don't get in trouble. And this kid said, you know, I did those things, and what happened? Now they're making me leave, and I don't want to leave. So he was one of the kids who got a voluntary departure order. He had to leave because he didn't have a basis. Mm-hmm. You know, in right now under the law, you know, to come to... because the people are very poor. But if what they're identifying as the issue is poverty, that's not enough to keep them, you know, in this country. And so many of them are having to leave, and they're not expecting it. And this is another reason I think that the word will get back out to the young people there that there's no guarantee you're going to be able to stay.
Mm-hmm. So that the other route is deportation back mm-hmm. to their home countries.
Yes.
Is that correct? And
and
on balance, what would you say is the key factor that will determine whether they get deported or mm-hmm. whether they can stay?
Well, if they have, they can also, another thing that wasn't mentioned yet is asylum. If they can prove that they have fear of going back, fear of government action, or that the government can't protect them from violent gangs, if they're able to win, and it's certainly not guaranteed. Now, again, I think a larger percentage of kids before won asylum. There's a lesser number now, a lesser percentage. If they don't get asylum to prove that they have the persecution reasons, fear of going back, and they don't happily come under something like a U visa with a parent, like a number of my clients, or if the other thing is if they're found to be victims of trafficking brought over against their will, if they don't have that, and if they don't qualify and don't have a lawyer to help them with this special immigrant victim way of resolving their case, then they have to go back.
Then they'll face deportation. Mm-hmm. Is the Obama administration is proposing, last I heard, $3.7 million emergency mm-hmm. Relief money. Would this help to address some of these problems, particularly this issue of attorney support?
Well, and not that.
Not that.
not that part, unfortunately.
That. Yes.
That
uh-huh.
One criticism of people who strongly believe this is a humanitarian and refugee yes. issue yes. are really complaining that such a small portion of that would go to helping the kids, providing help for the kids and support. And I don't think any of it, maybe a little bit, will go to attorneys, I'm not sure. Very mm-hmm. small portion, mm-hmm. because a great majority of that is to, you know, for Border Patrol, for more immigrant judges, for, you know, to get the kids out quicker. You know, that's
so
what
it might
most of that money
essentially
is.
Expedite deportation
yes.
rather than securing
yes.
children here.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it makes such an odd, it's made our difficult road to see for those of us who want to see comprehensive immigration reform happen. It's made that even more complicated now because this is such a hot political issue, and many people want to do something about changing that 2008 law and treat the kids from the other countries the same as they do Mexican kids who come in and just return them.
Well, let's shift then to what you would see, given particularly your experience, as to what the future should hold in terms of policy, because clearly the policy debate continues.
Yes.
And this particular law is now up for some debate. And then, of course, the immigration reform is further down the road, to be sure.
Mm-hmm.
What key recommendations would you want to make to see moving forward with both mm-hmm. laws, or how maybe they should mm-hmm. be combined?
Yeah. Well,
yes.
Oh, wait, I'd like to mention something else too.
Please do.
I don't think this is going to happen, but it's interesting that people who are most supportive of the kids and all the protections that they can get have asked the government to clear TPS for the kids.
And
TPS means temporary protective status. And it's something that we give to countries, El Salvador, within certain periods of time for different reasons, usually. Well, like in Haiti is a more recent example. After the earthquake, after the terrible conditions in that country, El Salvador and Honduras got it in 2000, or I guess it was around 2000, and have been able to stay. So that if that happened, it would be protection for all of the kids. I don't think that's going to happen, but that's something that's been proposed.
I see. And that would secure protection for a certain time period?
It's about 18 months.
About 18 months.
It's reviewed again by the Department of State to see whether it should be continued for another 18 months.
Mm-hmm. So the logic is really to expand DACA in a sense, the deferred.
Well, no, actually, because it's different. It's interesting because sometimes different things are called deferred action, but DACA, has very different qualifications. And DACA can be extended now, at least now, every 2 years can be renewed.
Yes, I see.
But they still need to show that they've been here since 2007.
Right. I see. Should any other reforms you should see going forward with this law? Has this law been good? I mean, from a political science perspective, mm-hmm. what is always fascinating is when you have bipartisan support, and it was close to unanimity
yes.
with regard to the 08 law.
Yes.
And so people seem to really support it across party lines.
Yes.
So is there really anything seriously wrong with the law that's in place? The 08 law.
The 08 law. I think so many of us were so disappointed that didn't happen. I don't think we even have that on the possible books right now.
Uh-huh.
But just to have any type of, you know, with the changes that we had, the law that people were looking at rather seriously, I don't know, a year or 2 years ago, more recently, I don't hold out much hope that that's gonna happen. I wish it would.
Mm-hmm.
One of the great things about the 2008 law was that it included, and this is so sad, that it would have protected the Dreamers, these kids who've grown up here, who were brought here as children with their parents before 2007, also before they were 16 years old. So it really was, there were a lot of restrictions on who could apply. Definitely kids who were brought in, and they would have had real legal status, permanent residency, and instead they just have this sort of deferred action. It's that gives them a little bit but doesn't go nearly far enough, in my opinion. I wish that we could see that become law, as well as more visas. We need more workers, especially qualified workers for different types of jobs.
Some of the, in terms of the legislation, there have been some proposals for tougher penalties for smugglers.
Mm-hmm.
Bring these children across the border.
Mm-hmm.
Current law applies to traffickers, but not to those smuggling willing individuals across the border. I don't know if mm-hmm. you heard about mm-hmm. some of these proposals to make stiffer penalties. Would that have any significant impact?
I think that they would be hard to implement.
Mm-hmm.
Because people who traffic people in are very clever, and there was an article about this recently in New York Times or Washington Post about how they're often, government officials in the countries that the kids go through who are involved directly with the smuggling or allow it to happen. So, and they're looking for different approaches, different ways of getting in, different ways of convincing, because they're often the ones who are convincing and telling the families back in the home countries, send your kids because they'll be able to stay. So they're very astute in how they can get around things. So I don't know that would be very easily implemented.
Mm-hmm. Turning to some of the politics, if you would, Maryland politics and Delaware politics. I mean, I can imagine that even though you work in Delaware principally, you're mm-hmm. involved and engaged. Where do you think this is going in terms of the regional politics on this issue?
Well,
is it getting harder to work in this area or easier, or do you see that?
To work in for whom?
In the question of immigration. I mean, mm-hmm. immigration is such a hot-button issue right now.
It is, and I think I'm concerned that this is going to make it a hotter-button
yeah.
issue
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and possibly could make people who are who don't like to see immigrants coming in, increase their negative feelings about it. That's a concern. On the other hand, people who feel that this is a humanitarian issue, I think, will hopefully speak up more too. What the outcome will be, I don't know. I mean, we know that states have made a lot of laws that are anti-immigrant in a number of ways. So I don't know if there may be some attempts like that in Delaware or Maryland. I don't know, but I think both states have really good governors who certainly see the humanitarian aspect of this and may be limited in what they can do, but they see that. And then provide, I know that the government is asking different states to provide housing through the ORR while kids are being processed and sent to their families. So I don't know if that will happen. It's been in the paper that Delaware doesn't have state facilities to do that, but the governor in Delaware has asked nonprofits to come forward if they have beds. I don't know really what the situation is in Maryland.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's been some issue about that because Martin O'Malley had some argument with the White House with regard to that, mm-hmm. and they accused him of being hypocritical because mm-hmm. he said, well, Carroll County was going to be one of the places, but that wasn't acceptable. So he's going to be searching for another place as well. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much
for
the conversation. this is Delmarva Today. We've been talking with Ms. Nita Biggs, an attorney with La Esperanza, serving the Hispanic community in Sussex County. This is Michael Laughlin sitting in for Don Rush. Thanks so much for listening.
Have you ever heard an idea that changed the way you look at the world?
Everything we think, we
feel. We've had to believe in impossible things.
Infinite possibility and that sense of potential. And I realize
we've had to refuse to fear failure.
You've got to persist through failure.
You can contemplate the meaning of infinity.
I'm Guy Raz. Join me each week for Ideas Worth Spreading on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Sunday morning at 10 on WSDL.
In our world, ideas can be liturgy. I'm Krista Tippett. Join me on Being, generous conversation about the questions that matter most. What does it mean to be human? And how do we want to live? We explore with theologians, scientists, philosophers, thinkers, and activists every week from American Public Media.
Sunday mornings at 7 on NPR News Talk 90.7.
My name is Michael Park, and every week on the International Americana Music Show, I play a selection of the best Americana music made solely by non-American artists. Whether it's alt-country from Australia, newgrass from Norway, or singer-songwriters from South Africa, there's music and interviews with Americana artists from lots of countries that may surprise you. So join me for the International Americana Music Show, Friday nights at 11 on WSDL 90.7.
Good morning again. This is Delmarva Today. I'm Michael Laughlin, sitting in for Don Rush for this morning's second half of our program. Just around the corner this coming fall, we face another election season, and a number of local county council races and other state and national elections are up for grabs. What will be the drivers of this fall's elections? Will the present debate over immigration and the refugee status of these children on our southern border have salience in elections, perhaps even locally? To discuss some of the issues in politics that we will be facing this coming fall are two local partisans steeped both in our politics for a number of years, Mr. David Parker, chair of the Wacomico County Republican Central Committee, and Mr. Michael Prettle, member of the Democratic Party's Central Committee. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Well, let me turn to you, David, first. We just had a long discussion with regard to the question of these children, unaccompanied minors coming across our border. And clearly it's been a national issue. Do you think it'll have any salience, the refugee issue, the immigration issue, for Maryland elections, and even locally?
It's going to have effect. And locally, it's really kind of intriguing. The response from the citizens, I'll identify them by party, has been worry and concern, like, if we take in children, where are we going to put them? How are we going to handle it? How are we going to pay for it? Because it would be a huge burden on the county. That's a concern. And I don't know if that's partisan or not. That's humanitarian issues aside. Can we afford to take in, say, two or 3,000 children? And those are the kind of numbers that have been bandied around. Now, a couple hundred? Perhaps no big deal. But a lot of people see an economy in our county that's in the absolute pits and say, what are we supposed to do next to get rid of? What do we get rid of next in order to manage to pay for this? So I'm in that camp. I worry about it. If we don't come up with some money, it's going to be really difficult. But again, I don't know if this is a partisan issue so much as it's dealing with the reality of the magnitude of this problem. That's the incredible part. Yeah, that'll affect lots of states and the nation. And I suspect in locally that anybody that stands out and says, I don't care what it costs, we've got to do this, I think they'll be in trouble. Because any challenger on of either party will jump at them and say, well, what are we giving up? And they'll have to defend that. So we don't give up anything. We'll just keep spending more money. And that isn't going to cut it with the way budgets are around here.
Michael, what's your take?
First, let me just correct. I'm not with the Central Committee, but I'm the president of the Wycomico Democratic Club in this county. But I think it's an important issue. I don't think it is going to have any direct economic or other impact on Wycomico County. I mean, I'm familiar with the discussion with Governor O'Malley. I think most Democrats support what he is saying. And I know the dialogue with the White House has been a little
heated,
heated or confusing, I guess, because, yeah, I mean, it's suggested that O'Malley doesn't want to take in these kids. He's being hypocritical, where he says he's been looking all over the state and he has proposed a number of places. I don't think there's going to be any direct impact on the Eastern Shore or on Wycomico County because, I mean, despite what my colleague says, I don't think that anyone's talking about the county subsidizing this. If there is an impact financially, it'll be supported by either the state or the federal government. But all the sites that I've heard of so far are on the other shore. I mean, I don't think anybody's talking about importing a large number of these children into the Eastern Shore counties. I think they will be handled by the nonprofit organizations, such as Ms. Biggs talked about, and helped be put with families. But I don't think there's going to be any sites here where they're going to try to house a large number of them. And if they do, it'll be paid for not by county funds, but by the state or federal funding.
So the salience, so the question of whether it affects elections is a moot point for most likely.
I think the Republicans are trying to make a wedge issue out of it,
yes.
and Congressman Harris has become outspoken on that. For some reason, he decided that he's going to take a stand in favor of the city of Westminster, and everybody says, why are you bothering? Why is that his issue? But I think, like a lot of other things, the Republicans are trying to make a wedge issue out of it, make an election issue out of it, but I don't think most of the people in the state are buying, and I think most people are supporting the approach that Governor O'Malley is taking, that it is a humanitarian issue and should be treated as such.
What then, if we could turn to the local context in terms of the elections, what do you think are the, if any, of salient issues that are going to be driving the local elections, or particularly the county elections, as I'm thinking about? Or is it going to be principally a kind of getting out the base election, particularly in the terms of the midterms? David?
That's part of getting out the base is part of it. We do sense an increasing anger and frustration, I guess, toward the O'Malley administration. But I don't know if that's real or not. But if so, that helps Republicans. I think the economy is going to be an issue, the state economy and the local economy. And whom do you blame for it? Who can fix it will be issues and argued. It may not be very intelligent, but the discussions will be held. In particular, as of right now, the Maryland economy is essentially flat. That is, it's not growing. Wages are the same as they've been. They have not increased. There were some blips up and some blips down, but it's essentially flat. Wycomico is slightly worse. The state as a whole has thousands of people fewer working than they had when the O'Malley administration began, when this whole problem started with the economy. So does our county. And virtually every year, we are about 1,000 people fewer workers. We have 1,000 people workers, roughly. It's 900 to 1,100 than the similar month a year before. It's not a good sign. And so, yeah, that's going to be an issue. And we have, as a result, increasing loads on social services. And that's not a good thing when you don't have any money.
So those are
issues that are going to affect things, mm-hmm. but I don't want to predict how it's going to happen mm-hmm. other than saying we've got to deal with these things. And the various county people running, the various state people running will come up with solutions, supposedly, and we have to listen to them and think, do they make any sense?
are their proposals, will that then be our county officials on the Republican side have specific proposals with regard to those economic matters?
I'm quite confident they will.
So presently not.
I'm not saying that either, but
yeah, of course.
It's not for me to announce.
I see. So these may be upcoming policy discussions, perhaps, for the elections.
I suspect we'll hear a great deal of that.
Michael?
Dr. Parker would like to frame things in who do you blame for the present situation. I would like to say who do you give credit for the present situation. Frankly, the state is not in bad shape. We are the wealthiest state in the country. We have the highest per capita income in the country. We, for years, have had the best school systems in the country. Everybody rates us at the top of the level. Sure, there are always issues. There are always problems. There's economic things. We're still suffering the effect of the economic downturn of a few years ago. I mean, things aren't rosy for everybody. And I mean, we certainly are very supportive of people who are out of work or people that are suffering some of the lingering effects in the housing industry and other parts of the economy as a result of the recent recession or whatever you want to call it. But as far as I'm concerned, I mean, it's not a problem to be dealt with. It's things to be fixed up, certainly, always. But the Republicans would make it sound like we're going to hell in a handbasket and, yes. Woe is us and what solutions do we have to solve these problems? Whereas I think the O'Malley administration has done a remarkable job. I think our Delegate Conway has done a great job of putting together a budget over the last few years that has been wonderfully structured to balance the economy between business and residents and agriculture and environment and those sorts of things. And we don't see it as a major problem. We see it as more of the same, which is a very prosperous state and a state where the elected leadership has been very successful in bringing us to the forefront of the country in a number of important aspects.
Has the minimum wage legislation, how do you think that is going to play? Clearly the O'Malley administration moved in that direction to pass a state rise in the minimum wage. And that should have some impact on incomes in Wacomico County.
The Republicans would have you believe it's a job killer, and none of the economic data over the last 20 years has shown that it is. When the minimum wage goes up, the economy as a whole prospers, but the Republicans would juggle the figures to say that's not the case, and they're going to say that it's going to hurt the economy, which is not proven to be the case in the past.
David, do you want to respond?
To say that none of the figures support that is just ludicrous. It's all an interpretation of data, and the Democrats make one interpretation, Republicans make another. One effect that occurs immediately when the minimum wage rises is the people at the bottom suffer immediately and for a long time very dramatically. That happens. Then they recover out of that. I have talked to local businesses and what the effect of both the Obamacare means and the minimum wage means. And they're talking about laying off workers because they can't afford to remain competitive unless they do. That's not going to help the economy. But the situation in Maryland that's going to become a political issue with all this is who's to blame, who's responsible. We have had one-party rule for the O'Malley administration. And the Republicans are so few in number, they can neither stop something from happening nor bring it to the floor, even in the House. They don't have enough members. So the result is everything that passes is either to the credit or the blame of the Democratic Party. Everything. And I can assure you that in Wicomico County, the farmers and the watermen do not feel they're being protected by the O'Malley administration, by the wonderful budgets. They feel they're under assault, and they see a daily attempt to put them out of business, to drive the chicken industry to North Carolina, for example, and to make it impossible to farm at all. They see themselves losing family farms that have been around for over a century because of what Annapolis is doing. That's locally. And I think that could very well be a serious issue for anyone running for office who says, oh, everything is rosy and fine. They don't think so.
I call it the whole farming issue and the development questions, economic development questions, are clearly that's a constant, it seems.
It is a constant in this county, and as you probably know, I'm very much involved with the environmental community.
Yes.
But frankly, I think that the environmental community, by and large, in Wicomico County and throughout the Lower Shore, has taken a very balanced approach. I mean, the Republicans are trying to convince the farmers that the Democrats are out to get the farmers. You know, we environmentalists say the farmers are the best environmentalists. And we have been very supportive of the farmers against development to some extent, because we share with the poultry industry and the other farming community the feeling that that development in the agriculture areas is a bad thing for everybody, except for a few developers who are going to make money out of it. But frankly, our elected leadership has been very good and very successful. I mean, I talk about Senator Mathias, I talk about Delegate Conway. They have been very supportive of the farmers. They have been supported by the farmers, and the farmers recognize that they're in Annapolis, and they help to moderate, if you will, some of the there certainly have been initiatives that didn't make a lot of sense. And the environmental community on the Eastern Shore weren't supporting the so-called chicken tax, where we don't support.
Yes.
We agreed with the idea of going slow on the phosphorus tool, you know, even though we think there is a serious problem with phosphorus in the bay and in the rivers. You know, we're not pushing hard that be implemented immediately. I think, as I say, Delegate Conway has been very outspoken and I think very sound in saying, let's look at the economy, let's have a balanced approach to these things. So, again, the Republicans would like to demonize the Democrats, those folks at Annapolis, for being out to get the farmers. We believe the chicken industry is absolutely essential to the Lower Shore, and we will do what we can to support it, while we, at the same time, feel that Purdue and the other major players in the chicken industry are serious about their environmental controls, and they are willing to work with us to try to make these things balanced. So, you know, there's always going to be a little tugging and pulling. We don't agree with them on everything, but there's not a big fight between the environmental community and the agricultural community.
How will this play out in terms of the county council elections is one of the things. I mean, one of the things, David, that one could say is that the Republicans have been in power for quite some time, really. They got the majority. Problems haven't gotten better. They've been stagnant. So couldn't one flip the criticism and say Republicans have been in power, no real progress? So perhaps it is an opening for Democrats to get into power.
One can always argue that way.
What's the defense of that against that?
The way the county is structured in terms of budgets, it is really up to the county executive to propose a budget and have the council approve it as much as anything. And if they don't, then the executive's budget goes into effect. And, of course, all county people and particularly people on the committee have to worry about what's the right thing for the county, doing the best they can. And so in that regard, whether Republicans or Democrats, really isn't a salient issue to them. It's just, what's the right thing for the county? And they use the information they've received to make those decisions. And so the six Republicans have been splitting about 3-3 lately on many, many issues. Well, Republicans have a chance to say, I'm not going to reelect somebody that did that. That's one approach they can take. Or they can say, yeah, but it's better than the alternative, if the Republicans look at it that way. And Democrats can say, well, that Republican isn't so bad. You know, they vote our way a lot of the time. You know, we talk about dinos and rhinos because they don't vote pure party line. Well, you get somebody in the county council, and they have to make the best decision they can for the county. They're not always going to agree with their party. Thank goodness. But they run the risk of the wrath of the party, always. But let's get people with courage doing that. So I don't see that problem. I do see a strong argument to be made that the problem with the county council or the county budget really goes back to the county executive and his staff, because the information they provide the council ends up being the basis for their decision.
Well, let's then press to the election. Richard Pollitt, of course, is up for reelection, and Bob Culver is the Republican.
Mm-hmm.
What is the critique of the Pollitt administration and his leadership?
I'm going to leave that to Bob Culver. I do know that his polling is showing really well, because he is a popular figure around the county, a businessman, farmer. and a member of the county council. He knows what's going on, and he knows some of the backstories on these things.
Well, will we be privy to the issues, Michael?
The problem the Republicans have is there's not much space between Mr. Pollitt's views and Matt Holloway, the Republican chairman of the council, on most of these issues. Frankly, Rick Pollitt, sometimes to the frustration of the environmental community, is very supportive of agriculture and is very much of a moderate. And to his credit, Mr. Holloway is the same way. He understands it. He comes from the agricultural community. He comes from the county, but he is a moderate. And he may be one of these people who was being characterized as a rhino. Frankly, I haven't heard anybody in the county being called a dino because the Democrats don't demonize people because they don't vote our way all the time. You know, I mean, I know environmentalists who are unhappy with some of the things that the county is doing or not doing, but that doesn't mean that we don't support Mr. Pollitt because we think he's been an excellent executive and we think he's going to be clearly reelected for another 4 years because he is taking this balanced approach, which is satisfying the basic constituents of not the far right people, nor a few environmental extremists, if there are any in the county, and I don't know any. But, he's basically taking a solid approach, which I think is in the best interest of the county. And he has a council that he feels he can work with rather effectively now. We would like to put a few more Democrats on the council, and we think we will this time around. But
if the Democrats were able to move into a majority, what difference would that make for county policy?
Well, I think we would be a little less pro-development, if you will. I mean, we are a little bit concerned about the counties talking about the so-called Eastern Shore Coalition on the environmental stuff. But, you know, we think that some of that is not valid or not in the best interest. But, again, it's not a major battle. It's just sort of a tugging and pulling a little bit about how far we should go in teaming up with the other counties, who some of which are taking a very strong anti-environmental stand in our judgment. So,
I'm curious about one of the issues that has been simmering for a number of years is the whole question of the revenue cap.
Right.
Is there any possibility that this is in the mix at all with regard to what happens in this coming election?
I don't think either side is going to raise that. I think that many of us feel very strongly that it's detrimental. And as you may or may not know, I had a little conference a couple of years ago sponsored by the Neighborhood Congress. And the Republican who I invited to speak spoke strongly against the revenue cap as the Democrats.
I was at that meeting. Yeah, I remember that. Yes,
but it's hard to move it politically. Because people see that as being tax and spend, which I don't think it is. But, But again, I think the county has done a good job of living within the budget. And even though Mr. Pollitt and Tony Sarbanes and folks feel that Phil Tillman think the revenue cap is terrible, they have learned to live with it. And some might even say that it's not been as detrimental as they had expected it would be.
David, do you have
let's have a discussion and a vote on that again. That's easy. Let the people decide. Republicans aren't all of one mind on this either. And it's not a simple issue. It's gotten complicated simply because of the presentation often, what it means, what it doesn't mean. We're dealing with an electorate that largely doesn't understand all the details and all the terminology when you get into something like this. That's part of the problem. They voted for it pretty solidly. Would they vote to amend it? I don't know. But I don't see it as a Republican issue in the upcoming elections. And I don't see it as a Democratic one, as Mike said, because it's just not—it's not a winner for anybody at this point. And I don't think it's a partisan issue either. It's again educational. If we all understood what was going on with the revenue cap and what the options were, taking it off or keeping it, we might decide differently. But I don't think most of us have that kind of knowledge.
But the problem is that these issues are easy to demonize, easy to oversimplify. Yes. And again, Mr. Culver, would be adamantly opposed to lifting a revenue cap because he would say it's more taxation on you
folks. Let Mr. Culver speak for himself.
Well, I'd be happy for him. I would love for Mr. Culver to listen to this program and come out tomorrow and say, I want to lift the revenue cap,
Yes.
And if the two candidates could agree on that,
if there would be an issue that would mobilize voters, I think it might be possible. If I could, let me move to actually that question. As you all know, of course, midterm elections tend to have lower turnout. than presidential elections, and we're facing a midterm election. What's your projection for your anticipation? Is there more work to be done to generate the kind of vote turnout than last time around? I mean, in 2010, there were 54,000 roughly registered voters, and 29,000 or 30,000 roughly voted, so with about a 55% turnout. What's your anticipation coming up for this? Is this seen as a big problem?
Not for our point of view. We see that the O'Malley administration's impact on the county, the Democratic Party's impact, as well as the Obama administration's, giving us people who are angry at Democrats, and that may get people out to vote. That's some of what we've seen. Now, that's a long time before the election, months. Everything can change. It could get far better for the Democrats or far worse, and likewise the Republicans. But right now, we see a way to charge our base, get them going. And that's likely to happen. But, again, the numbers, the statistical numbers of the percentage of people that vote is really kind of interesting, because Annapolis has prevented all virtually attempts to make the voting rolls accurate. That is, if somebody, for example, a child in the county, leaves the county and moves to Maine and registers to vote, they're still registered in Micomico County unless they tell our county they've left. There is no check back like it used to be prior to motor voting. The result is there are probably thousands of people on the rolls who don't vote. They're trying to purge dead people. But even that is a slow, tricky process. I mean, we don't know how many voters there are, registered voters, that are actually voters in this county. So the percentage is probably higher of the participation, but we have no idea what it is. That's an interesting fact. We think it'd be higher anyway. But
I'm wondering if those are – I mean, I'm not denying that there isn't some problem, but I suspect it's marginal to the –
Well, what does marginal mean? 5%? 1%?
I mean, I'm sitting here laughing because this is the Republicans' issue, which they have been trying to beat the dickens out of for 20 years now, and they haven't been able to show any voter fraud or any abuses, but they keep coming back to it over and over and over again. The Democrats are trying to give the vote to everybody they can. There has not been a single case I'm aware of any, not only not any prosecution, but any serious complaint, any indication of voter fraud or
You don't remember Andy Harris's opponent?
Yes, I remember Andy Harris's opponent, who was registered as a Republican in Florida at the same time that she registered as a Democrat in Maryland.
And voted in both places.
And you can, well, let's not get at that. You can vote in two different places under the state laws, but not under the
federal law.
Okay, no, I mean, look, it was a mistake. It was a problem, but that wasn't a voting thing. That was a registration. That was a candidacy issue.
One of the voting groups in Maryland has identified, I think it's 30,000 people who were dual registered in two states. And that's using the records they could get. And they couldn't get them all because the state was fighting them. And that's not a good plan. Where are they voting?
Okay.
But the evidence, though, is pretty clear historically that you're not denying that national figures in terms of projection of how many people are registered to vote and how many actually – the turnout, those figures. I mean, the facts are there that we have lower turnout in midterm elections, and we can quibble.
That's clear.
Yeah. Well, then you have to then agree that certain methodologies of assessing voter registration and turnout are accurate. In fact, fact based. And so, what I'm interested in your projections, and maybe go a step further. We're facing ultimately a generational change as we move forward in this decade. And this goes back to the whole immigration question, right? That the demographic shift towards more African Americans, Hispanic community is growing, and we're shifting over. Are we going to see this change significantly in the local area, in local politics? Not this present election
not
coming around.
Not in this election, but in the future, we hope so.
We move towards 2016. Are we going to see a significant change at that point?
We're going to work like the dickens to see to it, because they're all registering as Democrats, and that's part of the problem that the Republicans have, that most of the the new voters, and that's why they're so resistant to immigration and they're resistant to expanding the voter
rolls. Look, we're not resistant to immigration. That's ridiculous.
I beg to differ with
that,
you.
That is your opinion. It's not based on
facts. It's the opinion most Republicans I've spoken to have different views than I do.
Well, both of them? Yeah, well, come on.
Well, why don't you state a point? What would be what's the evidence you would raise?
No, I mean most Hispanics and other new citizens are registering Democratic. I mean, by overwhelming numbers, because the Democratic Party has been very open to working out a reasonable approach to immigration, and the Republican Party has been extremely resistant. And even the few Republicans like Marco Rubio, who are favoring a moderate approach, are getting castigated and be called rhinos by the right wing of the Republican Party because they're open to some sort of immigration reform. So,
do you see O'Malley's recent position, as we discussed in the first half of the program, taking a strong view with regard to the refugee status? Is that a play politically?
It was good politics, and it was very good policy. I mean, I agree completely with what he's done, and it certainly is also good politics.
David? Yeah.
Well, locally, the Republican registrations are creeping up as a proportion of the Democratic registrations. So while that may be happening, that the majority of the new Americans are, in fact, registering as Democrats, locally, it isn't being reflected that strongly. It is in general, I agree. But locally, it might be a more interesting situation because we're getting Republicans.
Well, we're going to have to tie it up there. We've been talking with Mike Preddle and David Parker, both members of their respective political parties. This is Delmarva Today. I've been sitting in for Don Rush, Michael Laughlin, and thanks for listening. We had a good time. Goodbye.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC-14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit PAC14.org.